Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1960, that the teen idol rock pop singer Fabian visited Elvis Presley at Graceland. What happened during this visit? Was it A, Elvis demonstrated his archery skills to Fabian? Was it B, Fabian took off and gave Elvis his pants? Was it C, Elvis and Fabian recorded kung fu fighting together? Or was it D, all of the above? Fabian's 1960 visit to Elvis's Graceland. What happened there anyway? And question number two, a version of the song Soul Man by John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd was released on this very day back in 1978. What was the name of their band? Was it A, the SNL Gang, Saturday Night Live? Was it B, the B&A Band? Was it C, the Blues Brothers? Or was it D, Band-Aid? Belushi and Aykroyd's song Soul Man. What was their band's name anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of December the 8th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1984, that the single Do They Know It's Christmas was released by Band-Aid. The group was assembled to aid in famine relief. Do They Know It's Christmas? That was 1984 today. And it was 39 years ago today, 1963, that Frank Sinatra Jr. was kidnapped. He was released after a $240,000 ransom was paid. And that was 1963 today. Dolly's Winter Welcome introduces our country music news. It's titled, Dolly Parton Rocks Out. The country legend takes on the rock and roll canon with a cast of A-list pals. This is written by John Dolan, published in Rolling Stone, December 2023 issue. Dolly Parton is arguably the most blessed and beloved living American. Of course, she's a paragon of country music, but her reach goes far beyond Nashville. From the disco pop sass of 9 to 5 to the soft rock glory of her classic Kenny Rogers duet, Islands in the Stream. Parton's 49th album, Rockstar, is her first foray into rock and roll. She got the idea to do a rock covers LP after being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2022. To make it happen, she's convened an astonishing collection of all-stars duet partners. Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Peter Frampton, and Mick Fleetwood are on the board for Let It Be. Elton John joins her for Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. Her granddaughter, Miley Cyrus, swings by for Wrecking Ball. When Parton can't get A-plus list collaborators, there's an A-lister there to pick up the slack. She wanted Jimmy Page and Robert Plant for Stairway to Heaven, but when that didn't work out, she called in Lizzo to rock a little hobbit pop flute. Mick Jagger had a scheduling conflict, so Pink and Brandi Carlile picked up the slack for a stomp through If I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Parton only goes for the biggest, splashiest karaoke core selections. Her warmth up for anything spirit and common touch bring almost everything she does endearingly down to earth, and she's every bit of vocal match for every heavy hitter who rolls through, whether she's feeling her heartbeat with Steve Perry's on Journey's Open Arms, or searching for some pie-in-the-sky summit with Chris Stapleton on Bob Seger's Night Moves. The best moments are gestures of sisterly community, especially ones with fellow travelers from the 1970s. Parton recalls her disco era by hitting the dance floor with Blondie's Debbie Harry for a glide through Heart of Glass. One of the most moving moments comes when Parton, Emmylou Harris, and Sheryl Crow honor Linda Ronstadt, who's been sidelined from music for health reasons, with a version of her classic, You're No Good. There are some original songs written for the project, but even when abetted by the likes of Rob Halford or Michael McDonald, the new material struggles to get noticed amid the classic rock fireworks. One new song people are talking about is Either Or with Kid Rock. It's an unfortunate choice given the kid's track record of Trump's antics, but poor judgment is as much a part of rock and roll as guitar solos and power ballads, and Parton has folded her own story into rock history with heart and class. Hallelujah Chorus, covered here by the Canadian Brass, introduce our classical music news. It's titled A Review of the Making of Handel's Messiah by Andrew Gant from the Bodleian Library at University of Oxford 2020 Press. This is reviewed by Gracelyn Hyman, published in WCPE's Quarter Notes, Winter 2023-2024. Any mention of Handel's Messiah likely to prompt you to hear some of the Western world's most glorious music in your head. Reading The Making of Handel's Messiah by Andrew Gant provides you with the history of this piece and a biography of George Frederick Handel in a very enjoyable format. The numerous illustrations add to the value of this book. The Messiah was not written on commission or for any special event. Composed in 1741, it was not performed until 1742. Operas were not permitted during Lent, but an oratorio with its sacred text and lack of traditionally opulent staging was acceptable during that holy season, and Handel, ever the entrepreneur, authorized Messiah's premiere during Lent of 1742. Handel used the structure of the music to create theatrical effects. For example, his use of relationships among musical keys produced spectacular effects. Handel often played the organ and conducted performances of Messiah. His scores were full of instructions, names of soloists, and arrangements specifically for them. In one chapter, Andrew Gant dishes on some of the most famous soloists and includes images of them. He provides reproductions of pages of Handel's scores, thus demonstrating that Handel himself did not have a definitive version of this oratorio. The book has two chapters devoted to the performance history of this works from the 18th through 21st century. There has been a lot of variety during all that time. Mr. Gant concludes that there is still no final consensus on how to present this masterpiece, and that is just as it should be. At the end of the book, there are notes for each of the chapters, suggested further reading, and an annotated discography. The book is lovely with its formatting and angelic cover design, but most importantly, with its informative, pleasurable reading about Handel's masterpiece, Messiah. Male a cappella group, Chanticleer, introduces our music research technology and history article. It's entitled, An Early Boy Band Was World Famous Until the Nazis Took Over. This is published on November 25, 2023, NPR.org, by Jeff London. Long before there were the Backstreet Boys, or BTS, there was a boy band called The Comedian Harmonists, a vocal sextet in Weimar, Germany. They were world famous. But once the Nazis rose to power, they were silenced because three members were Jewish. Their story has now been turned into a Broadway musical called Harmony, with a score by pop superstar Barry Manilow. About 30 years ago, playwright Bruce Sussman, who had collaborated with Barry Manilow on the musical Copacabana, went to a screening of a film about the Comedian Harmonists and endured 3.5 hours of German documentary making with subtitles, he said. And instead of being daunted by it, I was completely overwhelmed by it in the most positive way. And I ran to a payphone and called Barry and said, I think I might have found the story we would like to musicalize. Manilow had never heard of them, but was immediately smitten by their sophistication. They were a combination of the Manhattan Transfer musically and the Marx Brothers comedy, he said. But the musical possibilities aside, the group's story made for compelling, stage-worthy material. They rose from impoverished street musicians to international celebrities almost overnight, said Sussman. They were discovered in a little club singing on the same bill with Marlene Dietrich, who was unknown at the time. They sold millions of records at a time when the recording industry was in its infancy. They made 13 films, performed in the greatest concert halls around the world. And 1933, Hitler comes to power, and some of our group members are Jewish. And how they confront their collision course with history is our second act. The beauty of it is that, you know, in the most chaotic time in history, three Jews and three Gentiles found harmony, said director-choreographer Warren Carlyle. They literally found harmony when the world around them was pulling people apart. The show has gone through many iterations and productions over the years, but now Harmony is framed as a memory play. The last surviving member of the group, a character known as Rabbi, speaks directly to the audience. When he was working on Harmony in the 1990s, Barry Manilow actually met the real Rabbi, who turned out to be an elderly neighbor who lived just a block away from Manilow in Palm Springs, California. "He was adorable," Manilow said. "He went right back to the vaudeville world. He said if they hadn't destroyed what we did, we would have been bigger than the Beatles." Manilow also met the rabbi's wife, Mary. In the musical, she's played by Sierra Boges. She's pragmatic and sees the problems the group is facing as a Gentile before they do. Boges said the cast did research and spoke with a historian. And he said that the Jews in that time had too much hope and not enough fear, she said. "That's really stuck with me. And I worked that on almost every page of each scene that I would start." Danny Cornfield is making his Broadway debut as the young rabbi. He said he watched documentaries, read books, and even traveled to Berlin to prepare for the role. "I visited Rabbi and Mary's first apartment in Berlin, the apartment that they left, a potential synagogue that they probably got married at," he said. "So it was really establishing my own sense of relationship to the city itself, always relevant." While the first act is fairly lighthearted, the second act brings the Nazi threat quite literally into the audience. When that particular officer walks down the aisle of the Barrymore Theater, you know, the world has changed because our room has changed, said director Warren Carlyle. Harmony may feel especially relevant now because the world outside the room has changed. But Barry Manilow said, unfortunately, the show has always seemed relevant. Every time we mounted the show, everybody would say, "Oh, this is the perfect time for Harmony," said Manilow, because it was always this anti-Semitism thing going on all the time, every single time. This was the perfect time for Harmony. Well, of course, now it's very relevant.
I'm Jeremiah Dixon. I am a Geordie boy, glass of wine with you, sir, and the ladies I'm enjoy. Old Durham and Northumberland is measured up by my own hand. It was my fate from birth to make my mark upon the earth.
Mark Knopfler, Sailing to Philadelphia, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Ex-Dire Straits singer Mark Knopfler to sell guitar collection for charity. This is written by Mark Brown, published in The Guardian on the 21st of November, 2023. Mark Knopfler has said he wants to let his guitars have new adventures with new owners as he announced the sale of a collection of the instruments spanning his five-decade career. Knopfler, who made Dire Straits one of the biggest bands in the world, is to sell 120 of his guitars and amps at Christie's in London in January, with 25% of the proceeds going to charity. The singer-songwriter said that wherever he went, he still crossed streets to gaze at guitars in the windows of music shops, just as he did when he was growing up in the northeast of England. "I've done that since I was a little kid," he said. "I've lived with this love affair for over 60 years. The time had come," he said, "to take some of these treasured six-string companions out of their cases and leave them in the care of Christie's to allow them to have new adventures with new owners. I'll be sad to see them go, but we've had wonderful times together, and I can't play them all." Knopfler, 74, was born in Glasgow and moved as a child to Northumberland. He went to grammar school in Newcastle and told the BBC he would spend hours looking at the displays in JG windows in the city's central arcade, dreaming of the day he could have a guitar. "I can still remember the first time I plucked up enough courage to pick one off the wall with trembling fingers," he said. "It was a Spanish guitar, and one of the Giordis in the shop said, 'If you drop that, I'll drop you.' I didn't even know how to play. I was just desperate to have it in my hands." The guitars being sold range in estimate from £300,000 to £500,000. Christie said the highlight of the sale, with an estimate of £300,000 to £500,000, was Knopfler's 1959 vintage Gibson Les Paul Standard, which he used on his Sailing to Philadelphia, the song playing in the background now, by the way, tour in 2001, and Kill to Get Clemson tour in 2008. It's described as true collector's instrument with a beautifully faded cherry red sunburst finish. Also up for auction is a 1983 Les Paul that Knopfler used to record two of Dire Straits' best-known songs, Money for Nothing and Brothers in Arms. He also used it on stage at Live Aid in 1985 when Sting sang vocals on Money for Nothing. The instrument has an estimate of £10,000 to £15,000. Some of the guitars will go on tour to New York in December before the sale in London on 31 January. The charities benefiting are the British Red Cross, Tusk, and Brave Hearts of the North End. Uptown Funk introduces our local music news. Tickets go on sale for 2024 Dreamville Fest in Raleigh. This is written by Kristen Johnson, published in the News and Observer on the 6th of November, 2023. Pre-sale tickets for one of the biggest hip-hop and R&B music festivals on the East Coast became available for purchase in November. The Dreamville Festival, led by Fayetteville rapper J. Cole, will take over Dick's Park near downtown Raleigh the weekend of April the 6th through the 7th, 2024. Over 100,000 fans from all 50 states and over 23 countries attended the 2023 event in Raleigh. So go to DreamvilleFest.com for tickets and more information about the 2024 Fest. So how did you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day in 1960 that the early rock-pop singer Fabian visited Elvis Presley at Graceland. What happened during this visit? Was it A, Elvis demonstrated his archery skills to Fabian? Was it B, Fabian gave Elvis his pants? Was it C, Elvis and Fabian recorded kung fu fighting? Or was it D, all of the above? Correct answer. Answer B, Fabian gave his pants to Elvis. Yeah, turns out that when pop star Fabian visited Elvis's home, Graceland, on this day back in 1960, Elvis somehow felt compelled to demonstrate his latest karate moves. Unfortunately, he wasn't wearing his looser-fitting karate outfit and ended up splitting open his pants, whereupon Fabian took off his pants and offered them to Elvis. A gracious act at Graceland during these December days of gifting among friends and colleagues. And the answer to our second question, a version of the song Soul Man by John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, was released on this day back in 1978. What was the name of their band? Was it A, the SNL, Saturday Night Live gang? Was it B, the B&A band? Was it C, the Blues Brothers? Or was it D, Band-Aid? Correct answer. Answer C, the Blues Brothers. As noted in a 6/19/20 article by Roger Cormier in mentalfloss.com, the Blues Brothers just won't quit. It has been over 40 years since John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd brought their Saturday Night Live characters, Jake and Elwood Blues, to the big screen with the Blues Brothers, a loud, money-making, car-smashing love letter to both Chicago and rhythm and blues. The Blues Brothers made more than $115 million in theaters worldwide, and it was released on June the 20th, 1980, even though director John Landis and the crew couldn't identify whether the movie was a comedy, a musical, a classic, or an expensive disaster. So let's close out today's program with Elvis doing his holiday blues tune, not necessarily wearing Fabian's pants, Blue Christmas.
I'll have a blue Christmas.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
With your Christmas of white, but I have a blue.